Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI.
Woo!
Welcome into episode 378 of The Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Bridget and Scott, for the second time in three games, David Pastrnak and Pavel Zacha connect in overtime in Boston to send the home crowd home happy. The second second game as well in three, where they had a third period comeback. So the Bruins beat the Flyers 4-3 in overtime, and they're starting to show some resilience in games where it's not going their way in a scoreboard for the majority of the game.
Yeah, and that leads perfectly into my opening shift, which is about the fact that they, as you said, did come back in the third period once again. And, you know, Joe Sacco, Charlie McAvoy said after the game, like, Bruins are starting to believe that they have a chance in these games and that they can do it, and they should believe that they can do it. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago that even if they wouldn't admit it, they probably didn't have a whole lot of belief. I know certainly we didn't. No Bruins fan watching would have had any belief, because for 20 games, they were the worst third period team in the NHL. They had the worst goal differential. They were losing close games, never mind not coming back, but they were losing tie games. They were blowing leads. And now, since Sacco took over, in nine games, they've actually been one of the best third period teams. They are a +5 in the third period in nine games since Sacco took over. That's fourth best in the NHL during that time. On Saturday, they're down 3-1 going to the third. And honestly, like, the way the game was going, you wouldn't really have thought, like, oh, you know, Bruins, like, this wasn't the Vancouver game where it's like the Bruins have been in control and they're getting a ton of chances and, you know, the dam's going to break at some point. Like, they weren't getting a lot of chances. They weren't generating much offensively. And yet they still found that they found a way to dig in, fight through, and come back. And starts with a Trent Frederick goal, his second of the game, a little over 5 minutes into the period. And then you get the tying goal from Marchand, and then they win in overtime. And, you know, the more you do something, the more you see it happen, the more you start to believe that you can do it. And I think this Bruins team now is starting to have some belief that they're not out of games. And just because they're down by a goal or two going to the third, they still have a shot. And that is a big thing in any sport. Like, once you start believing that you can do something, that confidence goes a long way.
I think, Brian, you should go next. I think yours makes sense to go next.
Okay. Yeah, so just piggybacking off of Scott, one thing that it kind of annoys me a little bit when I see things online is when individuals actively criticize the or take merit away from the Bruins' recent play and win streak and success under Joe Sacco. They're 7-2 under Joe Sacco. It bothers me when people actively say, well, they're playing shit teams. They're playing non-playoff teams. And I'm not here to disagree with what you're saying in the sense of they're playing weaker teams and that you want to wait and see how they do against teams higher in the standings. And like, I understand that. Like, that is totally true. And if you want to, in the back of your mind, say to yourself, you know, they're playing well, but it's a bit of a weaker schedule, that, like, that's okay. That's just natural. That's common sense. But there's this agenda out there of, like, actively rooting against what they're doing when the first month and a half of the season, they were losing to these non-playoff teams. They were a non-playoff team themselves. And right now, based off of points percentage, they might barely be a wild card team. So it's not like they're this team that isn't themselves struggling and had to work their way up as well. And I just think it's one thing to say, let's see it against better teams. And it's another thing to shit on them for a month and a half, like we did when they're losing to these teams. But then when they start beating these teams, a schedule that they can't control and win, that we sit there and say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't count. Like, so that to me, it's like, it's just no one's saying that they're winning the Stanley Cup and no one's saying great wins, but I don't like when people criticize a team for doing what they're supposed to do. This is a schedule that's in front of them. What are they supposed to do? Lose these games? Because if they did, I can imagine what people would be saying. So if you want to sit there and say, let's see this team play better teams, I'm with you. I get that. I want to see that too. But in the meantime, just take these wins against these teams and just move on. Like, there's no need to just, well, you know, they played the Flyers and the Canadiens and the Blackhawks and the Red Wings twice in Utah. It's like, I get it. But they also lost to the Columbus Blue Jackets 5-1, a team that was last place in the Eastern Conference that got Jim Montgomery fired. So let's just take this season one day at a time and stop with these agendas to just shit on everything, good or bad.
Well, it's a favorable schedule. Like, that's what you needed when you got the coaching change. Like, it is the ramp up that they needed. Now let's see if they can have the confidence. But they weren't just going to go from 0 to 100. Like, they needed the time to ramp up to that. So if anything, you have to just say steps in the right direction. We're not all the way there yet, but definitely wouldn't go as far as to say, you know, oh, you know, just wait and see, they're gonna fail again, like, or what, like what you're saying, Brian, like not being able to enjoy or talk about the good. Maybe people just got used to talking about the bad. So anyway, that's not my opening shift. We'll get back to that later. My opening shift has to do with something that was said after the game by John Tortorella. And I'll just read it first, and then we'll get to our thoughts on it. So Tortorella apparently was angry about the officiating, which I do think there was some calls that probably could have just gone without having a whistle, you know, just play through it. But here's the quote that he had before anyone asked a question. He came out and said, "Yeah, let me start. One thing I teach my team is not to dive. Maybe I should start teaching them that. The way this has gone here, the way this S-word goes on."
You can say shit, Bridget. You're on a podcast.
I know. I normally do. Okay. "The way that this shit goes on, maybe I should start teaching them how to dive." Followed by many replies on Twitter of, "You already have the best diver in the league. Mishkov can teach people how to dive, blah, blah, blah." So it sounds like at first, like, you're like, oh, maybe he's talking about his own team, but he's not. He's saying that the Bruins were diving. And you guys were able to watch everything live. I only was able to watch the first two periods live, and then I had to go do a game at Providence. So I came back and watched the third period in overtime with this in my mind, just looking for what he might be talking about on the Bruins' end. And yeah, the Bruins had some power plays in the third period, but the one that they panned to the bench showing him, like, angry about was a very clear trip on Pastrnak where the stick was directly under his skate, and there was no avoiding falling down in that situation, and it was a trip. And now, could he be frustrated with the compilation of calls that were going against the Flyers? Sure, he's an emotional coach. We know that. He has been fined many times for things that he has said and done, defending his team or just losing his temper, whatever it may be, because it's been a lot of different situations. But if you're calling the Bruins divers, I don't think that is what actually happened. I think maybe the officials should have let things go. Like when Lauri fell, he didn't dive. He just was losing his edge, and it was unfortunate. I think it was Hathaway was in the area at the time, and they get the call. By the way, Bruins never scored on any of those power plays that he was talking about in the third period. So it was inconsequential at the end of the day. Like, they gave up even strength goals and an overtime goal. It didn't have anything to do with anyone diving. So the real issue is that the worst dive in the game was Mishkov. And people were mad about that. It happened in the first period. And it's like, it just seems hypocritical.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. Like, this is classic Tortorella, though. And it's so rich because it's like the holier than thou, you know, we don't dive. I don't teach my team to do that. And it's like, dude, have you watched Matvei Michkov? Because not just this game, but like I've seen it in other games he's played. And listen, Matvei Michkov is an elite talent. He is special. He's going to be a great player in this league for a long time. Right now, he is a flopper. He does. He goes down very easy and he tries to draw calls. And that reputation will build. And at some point, he'll probably have to take it out of his game because he'll get called for embellishment a couple times. And that's usually enough to kind of shake a guy out of that.
Or Zadorov will ring his bell because apparently that's what Zadorov does to people that dive.
Well, Matt McAvoy went after him.
Yeah, he did.
You know, for that dive. And, you know, I thought that should have all evened up. Like, it should have been two penalties aside, but obviously they didn't call Michkov's embellishment. So it was a Flyers power play. But yeah, it's like, come on, Tor. It's like, again, I know what he's doing. He's trying to play the game. He wants his players to know that he has their back. But it's not like, we all have eyes. We all saw the game. Like, we saw Michkov flop. And as Bridges said, like, we saw that Lauri was just losing an edge. He didn't flop. Like, it was a bad call, but it wasn't a dive. He was losing an edge, and he went down. And
yeah, like, he cut too hard, fell. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes you just shouldn't blow the whistle in that case. But also, it happened so fast. It's like, that was a bad call, but it wasn't a dive. And then there, of course, were some, I assume, Flyers fans comments on Twitter that was like, he nailed it. I'm like, I don't think he nailed that post-game comment. Didn't seem like it made a whole lot of sense. And Scott, you say like, oh, he's defending his team. Well, they tripped people. like I would think you'd be mad about taking penalties when you like putting your stick in that situation at least for the Pastrnak one. Like I forget who it was, but he was defending. He was behind the play. He got behind Pasta, and all he could do was try to stick out, try to poke check. But he was so far behind that all he got was a skate. So like, do we want to?
Yeah, it was Couturier.
Yeah, do we, like, is that really what you want, or do you want to say, hey, let's not do this again?
So as far as torts goes, I will say, guys, I love it. I appreciate it. We're talking about it. I think having characters is good for the game, and I think that I really appreciate and respect what John Tortorella brings to the table, whether he's behind a bench or on a panel. I think that having characters and personalities is always a good thing. And whether you agree or disagree with the individual or not. And I think we all here agree with that sentiment as well. As far as embellishment, I think embellishment in 2024, and it has been for some years now, But as we sit here in 2024, entering 2025, embellishment is unfortunately a major part of today's NHL, which goes far beyond just the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers. All 32 teams have players, some more than others, and some players more than others, that embellish because they know that it's going to be called more oftentimes than not. I feel like embellishment has gotten to such a high level because as a direct result of how nitpicky and tic-tacky officiating has gotten in the league, and the officials are calling the game based off of what the league has told them to do. And it's kind of like a revolving door. And I feel like, unfortunately, increased embellishment league-wide is a result of the NHL trying to create more offense and, you know, have more power plays, create more speed, all these things, which ironically Phil Esposito said, if you want more speed, make the rink bigger, not more calls. Because there used to be a time not long ago where the Montreal Canadiens stood out amongst the rest of the league, not just because they had the most Stanley Cups, but because they were notorious for embellishing far more than other teams. And now it's like all the teams are the same. They all abuse embellishment the same. They feel a stick on their hands or they feel a stick up high. They jerk their head back because they know these refs are going to call it. How do you guys feel that officiating these days, indirectly or directly, promotes players to want to embellish because they know it's going to get called and put their team on the power play?
Well, ironically, it's also an era where, like, you can't review for this, but like it makes you look bad on social media or in the highlights when like you're getting caught by the camera, you're not getting caught by the ref. Like it can be embarrassing after the fact, but clearly, you know, people don't care. But Scott, correct me if I'm wrong. It was about a year or two ago, their league said they were going to try to crack down on embellishment and it was going to be one of like their main points because after they initiated the, you know, the slashing rule changes, they also were right around the same time talking about trying to get embellishment out.
They go through cycles like every few years, it feels like, where they say they're going to cut down on it and you get some more embellishment calls and then it kind of like fades and it's all cyclical. Like maybe this is a time to ramp it up again and start to call embellishment a little bit more or find guys after the fact if it's not caught on the ice. I think we talked about this like at some point last year, and you know, my opinion is like, to me, it doesn't really feel like it's any more or less than before. And honestly, I still feel like the vast majority of the time I watch games, I really don't think about embellishment at all. So maybe I'm just not wired to be going out of my way to look for it.
I've heard Scott.
Or I just ignore it more. I don't know.
On the ninth floor, there's been times where I remember you going, "That's embellishment." Like you'll say it out loud.
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's like extremely obvious, yeah. But I would say most of the time, like I'm not really thinking about it or feel like it's that bad. And part of that is guys don't really have to embellish because so much is already called. Like, you know, if you get your stick in a guy's midsection or on his hands, it's a penalty 90% of the time anyway. So like, the guy doesn't have to embellish that. The refs are just going to call it anyways, which is why you see like Nikita Zadorov get upset when Lucas Raymond, you know, does the whole like shaking his hand when he got a love tap on the glove. And it's like, that's going to get called 90% of the time anyways. You don't have to go around shaking your hand like that.
I will say on Zadorov. And so you're right, Scott, with the stick around in and around the hands, not a ton of embellishment is needed because first of all, players don't want to take their hand off the stick and because they know they can play through it. And honestly, they don't even feel it 75%+ of the time that they get a penalty on them. I didn't feel it.
Yeah. It's like, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but it's why, like, I want those penalties to go away. Like just stop calling. Yeah. I've said it before, but like, it's so refreshing to go to a college game. Like I was at the BC at Lowell game on Friday night and you see guys like, get that love tap on the hand. And I'm like trained watching so much NHL. I'm like looking for the hand to go up. And it's like, oh, that's right. They don't call that all the time in college. Yeah. Like
I love hockey East officiating. It is so much better.
Okay. Well, I can't go that far, but
it's better though. It is better. It trust me, it is.
On this one thing, yes. I don't know. I still see a lot of awful officiating.
Well, but they do. They are better at the head penalties as well. Like, they're better at enforcing some of the dangerous hits than the NHL is. But I was at a game. I was broadcasting.
I also was at a BU game a couple weeks ago where they reviewed a goal literally three times. And I was like, you can't just look at everything. Because it was like, they did like an official review, and then one team challenged, and they had to look at it again. And then like, there was something else that they had to go back to the box for. And I was like, can't you just look at everything at once and just get it right? Anyways, that's my rant on college.
Well, I was broadcasting the Providence College, Colorado College game on Friday and Saturday. In the Friday night game, I swear they were going to kill each other. Someone got slashed so hard in the chest, like blatantly, no call. I was like, all right, well, I guess we're just letting everything go in this one. I guess the final note, officials are inconsistent in every league.
Well, they are, and hockey Reps happens up. Fast.
Put it on a banner.
Hockey, look, I don't know what the excuse is for football, because hockey happens fast. Football, there shouldn't be too much. But real quick, just one last thing. Yeah, the stuff on the hands, like when you're playing hockey, like you don't feel that. If you're being hooked where you're being impeded, it should be an obvious call. So Scott, I agree with you there. But where the embellishment in the NHL really, really ramps up, and it's funny you brought up Nikita Zadorov, because I can't remember if it was the same game, but he had those comments in the post game about Mason Raymond. That's the kid from the Canucks.
Lucas Raymond.
Shaking his wrist. There was a game, if it wasn't the Detroit game, it was the Montreal game. It was a very recent game at home. Maybe it was a Pittsburgh game, where Zadorov was rounding his net and somebody's stick rode up on him, but it didn't make contact with him. But he pushed his head back and he got the call. So Zadorov also embellishes. But my point is, the high sticking embellishments is the biggest problem. If you're an NHL player and you got somebody on you and their stick is anywhere near your head but not touching it, you throw your head back 2 minutes. It's automatic. And that to me is where you probably see it. That to me is where you probably see some of the embellishment more than maybe in prior generations or even years. Because I think NHL players realize, like, that one, it's tough for the refs to prove that it didn't hit you. So that's the one that bothers me, when people throw their head back like they got shot. I mean, look at Tom Wilson gets a puck to the face. He's got four jaws yesterday, four cheekbones. And, you know, I know that was a puck, not a stick. But, like, hockey players are very tough. And, you know, it's when you see the little head snapbacks, if you're not getting hit with a stick, you know, then you shouldn't be snapping your head back. But they do.
Tom Wilson's going to be trying out for a Chipmunk's Christmas Carol.
Oh, my God. Well, but here's the thing. I have, like, really, like, strong reflexes to stuff coming. Like, when stuff is coming at your face, you're always like, you know? Like, it's just a natural.
Phrasing.
What?
That's true. That's
the
true.
Phrasing.
Did you say phrasing? To cut this part out.
Yeah, mark that timestamp.
No, we're good. Keep going.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I don't really care. Let's go on to overtime, and we'll start with Scott's opening shift.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, it was a game where they had nothing. Like, I don't think the Bruins played very well for most of Saturday's game. Mm-hmm. But this is, we kind of talked about in the last podcast, like, they're finding a way to win when they only have their B minus or C plus game. And that's important. And, like, that's, you know, especially need that against lesser teams that you should be getting points against. You know, so to tie in Brian's a little bit, like, yeah, okay, the schedule's been a little soft, but they had a losing record against non-playoff teams under Montgomery this season. So now you're finding a way to win close games. You're finding a way to battle through. And that's what we saw again on Saturday. So, like, yeah, sure. Would we all, you know, would you prefer that they go out and blow everyone out 6-0? Like, of course, but that's not this team isn't built to do that, not even against bad teams. Like, they'll have a couple of those as the season goes on, but for the most part, we know this team's going to be playing a lot of tight, grinding type of games, and those are games that you know, David Pastrnak this week said they have to be comfortable in uncomfortable games, and he got to that eventually after, like, stumbling through the comfortable, uncomfortable part for a minute, but which is pretty funny, but like they're getting more comfortable in these types of games, and that ends up being a good win. Like, yeah, sure, it would have been great if they were much better the first 40 minutes, but welcome to the NHL. Like, the reality is most teams don't have a whole ton of 60 minute efforts. Like, most games are two teams that are some good, some bad, dominate a stretch, get dominated for a stretch of the game, and you just have to find a way to pull it out. And they did.
Yeah. And by the way, like, this connects to both of your opening shifts, but right now the Bruins are, there's only one team on a longer winning streak than the Bruins right now. It's so you can't complain when they're finding ways to win. They're winning in overtime. LA is the only team with a 5-game win streak. Everyone else is less than the Bruins 4. So they're trending in the right direction. It may be against teams that they should be beating, but they weren't beating those teams earlier in the year. So it's all positive. And like you said, they had been struggling at home in those comeback games too. So they're doing that. The fans are able to see a better product on the ice than they were seeing earlier in the season. Zacha has looked better. Like, we were talking about certain guys who hadn't done anything. I think very recently we said Trent Frederick was quiet. He had scored twice. He had a pretty athletic goal that he chopped out of the air. But anyway, I think you're seeing individuals take steps in the right direction too, not just team defense, team play. Like, each guy you're seeing, something is clicking more than it was in the past, whether it be because there's a new line combination or people's energy is just higher and belief is higher. But yeah. Zacha's had some great finishes. Pasta's had some great assists. And even though he hasn't been scoring and still can't seem to score from his spot on the power play, because everybody knows what he's going to do, it gets blocked a lot of the time, but people are making steps forward. And so the team has been making steps forward. And we can talk about the road trip coming up, because they're going to be away from home for, I think, 12 days. And yeah, that's going to be a tougher stretch. But
I would just say to the point you're making, Bridget, individuals beginning to step up, that's kind of been my thing the whole year. I'm not saying the Bruins are going to win the Stanley Cup or even come close, but whatever their result on the season is, as long as it's the players on the roster playing to their capabilities and their potential for the most part, or close to it. Like, if you're going to miss the playoffs, but Pasternak scores 110 points, you know, Coyle's got 45, Zacha's got 50, Lindholm's got 55, Marchand's got 65, Frederick and Geeky have 40, like Brazo has 4. If you're going to miss the playoffs and everybody plays that way, then you could sit there and say, all right, the team's just not good enough. Or if they go to the first or second round and they lose, okay, they just weren't good enough. But it's not because the players that were on the roster were playing at a small fraction of what they've showed in the past. You understand the difference I'm looking for here? So if they can play to their potential, okay, fine. You lose, you miss the playoffs, you lose in the first round, okay, you just weren't good enough. But it's not because the players that were there weren't playing to what they can do. And that, to me, is when I get annoyed and pissed off, is when you have players that are on pace for 15 points when, outside of their career years, which I'm not saying they'll hit, but they ordinarily are like 25, 30 points higher than that. Like, Charlie Coyle over his career has been like a 40 to 45 point guy on average. Okay. Not a 60 point guy, but not a 15 point guy. So I just want players to play up to what we've seen in a lot of cases for the most part. And whatever happens, happens. But anything short of that, it's like, okay, why didn't they get the best out of each other?
Yeah, like, it's the difference between being a legitimately bad team that misses the playoffs and has one of the worst goal differentials in the NHL, which is what they were for 20 games, versus being a team that makes the playoffs and figure out what your ceiling is from there. And that's what they've been the last 9 games. The way the Bruins are playing right now, they're a playoff team. They're in playoff position. If they continue to play like this, they'll build even more of a gap between themselves and the Flyers, Sabres, Senators, Islanders of the world. Like, when those guys are at least playing up to something resembling their, not even their ceiling, but their average level, you're better than those teams. You're in the playoffs. And maybe you're just a first-round exit, but you're there. You're in the top half of the league. And then you can see if you can build to be more than that. Where they were is, like, that's why it was so unacceptable, because they were like an actually bad team playing bad hockey and getting badly outscored and outshot. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, maybe they're that when, you know, like 8 of your top 9 forwards are all playing poorly, but that's not actually what they should be. That was never what this team actually was in terms of strength of the roster. And now you're seeing them at least find a level, which is where they needed to start. You gotta walk before you can run.
Yeah, and after the game, they showed one of the plays that Morgan Geekie made in the third period, where it was like second, third, fourth effort, and Geekie gets the puck out to Pasta, and it ends up with a scoring chance, or it ended up in a goal. But it starts with a defensive zone shift where Geekie just not letting possession go away and trying to get the puck out of his own end. And it was just small details like that for guys who, like, Geekie was in a slump for a while too. And you know, he has started to, or I shouldn't say started to, but, like, you're noticing some of the small details of this game more because the Bruins are finishing after it, and they're actually able to build off of it and make plays after it and follow it up with goals or even just good chances that you notice. But that was one of the efforts. And then Pasta on the overtime game winner, and Zacha winning board battles, just absolutely scrumming for the puck, not letting possession go away, fighting for every inch, and it ends up in a overtime goal and a game winner because their effort is just more than it was in the past.
Bridget, that last part is so important to say. So, like, on that play, right? Let's say David Pastrnak does a flyby, okay, and the Flyers go down the other end and score. Is David Pastrnak less talented because he did a flyby? No, his talent is still his talent, but he had the work ethic and the determination on that play where he wanted it more. And that's the name of the game. Like, that is without the will and the work ethic, without the puck, with and without the puck, but without the puck to get open, to win battles, to win races, then you're not going to put yourself in position to allow your skill to execute. And that's, you know, hopefully that's something that they're finding out. And as far as the conversation we were just having, where, you know, if everybody's playing to their capabilities and they end up being a first round exit, if your response to that is, well, yeah, Brian, yeah, Bridget, yeah, Scott, that's what I'm talking about. They're a perpetual first, second round exit. That's not good enough. If that's what you're saying, if that's what you're feeling, then, like, I'm not disagreeing with you. Like, that's totally, if your point is, even if they do play to their best and they're first round exit, that's the problem, guys. I want them to be a champion. Like, yeah, that's totally fair. That's a different conversation. Like, that's, you know, let's look at roster construction. Let's look at, you know, other issues that's kind of a separate conversation, because what they have right now, what we're talking about is, okay, the roster is what it is in this moment. What can they do to get the best out of each player? And then if that's not good enough, then of course, yeah, like, okay, that's not good enough. So make some changes and be better. You know, that's totally fair as well.
Worry about getting there first.
Right.
Like you don't get to have a conversation about, oh, they're, you know, they're easy exit if you're not even going to make the, like, it is first and foremost about scrapping your weight, getting as many points. If they're ugly or if they're pretty, it doesn't matter. And getting there, because then you never know. I mean, we've seen how the NHL playoffs go. You do not have to be the best team to go on a run. When you have a goalie that can get hot, you know, you have that. You have theoretically pieces in place on your defense that can lock things down. We've seen them do it in the past. They might not be all in sync with it right now, but once you get into the playoffs, a lot of times all bets are off. I mean, the Florida Panthers were just barely made it into the playoffs the year that they made it to the final and knocked the Bruins out the year prior to winning the cup. So you just got to skirt in sometimes and get the right things to happen once you get there. But this is the regular season, and they were falling behind in the points percentage race, in the points race, and they need to find their way back. And that's really all we can talk about right now.
Yeah, like the foundation for how we, you know, we thought, like, okay, this team's going to have any success in the playoffs, here's how. Like, that foundation can still be there. We've seen, we thought it was going to be defense and goaltending. We've seen the defense get better under Sacco. That can still be a strength of this team, especially because you're doing it right now with Hampus Lindholm out. And, like, he's going to come back, and that's going to help. Jeremy Swayman, I think, still has another level or two to get to. But we saw last spring that he can get to that level. Like, we saw him be the best goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs. If he gets back to that or close to it, all of a sudden, like, you might have that defense and goaltending as your backbone. And that can go a long way. And, like, even if your offense still isn't great, that could be a winning formula, because chances are you're going to play a lot of low scoring, grinding games where it comes down to one or two bounces, one or two chances, whether you finish them or not. And, like, yeah, that's like a really nerve wracking way to approach it, where you're like, okay, wow, our formula isn't just that we're more talented and a deeper team. It's, you know, we have to grind a team down. But guess what? That's how a lot of playoff series go. Like, even you saw last year in the first round against the Maple Leafs, like, Toronto's this you know, high-flying offensive team. That series gets ground to a halt as it goes on. Like, those last 3-4 games of that series were all low-scoring, close games down to the wire. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of how most playoff series go. And teams that are going to go far have to win a lot of those games. And that comes down to, it may very well just come down to who has the better goalie. So it's like that formula is, like, still achievable for this team. But as we've said, like, before we ever get to that, they just have to right the ship and, like, have some semblance of structure that was completely absent the first 20 games of the season. So they're doing that, at least. Like, it's a start.
I think a big part of that formula is, no pun intended, is Nikita Zadorov. And earlier this year, honestly, up until, you know, this recent stretch here, he hasn't looked good, clearly. And people have been all over him. And, you know, it's kind of a combination of a few things. It's the beginning of an NHL season. Everybody has a lot of juice, a lot of pep, a lot of energy. And that combined with Nikita Zadorov having a slow start, trying to grasp a new system, a new city, whatever you want to call it. So you had opponents feeling good, feeling fresh, and Zadorov feeling slow, sluggish mentally, and not being on top of his game. But, and I'm not by any means saying that he's been amazing as of late, but slowly you're starting to see, as the season wears on here, it becomes more of a grind. You're starting to notice his play against the opposition in little ways, boxing people out, players not being willing to go to those 50-50 races with him as much anymore. You're starting to see his presence of having to play against him you know, in a regular season, when now opponents, they're a little bit banged up. They're feeling the travel of the season. They're feeling this, they're feeling that. You're starting to see a little bit, very slowly, what I think the Bruins are hoping to see with his acquisition. I know it's early and I'm not saying he's been great, but you can sense that he's becoming more impactful on a shift to shift basis, especially with, you know, some board battles and net front battles. I mean, Travis Konecny looked like, you know, he really got banged up when Zadorov stapled him against the boards yesterday, and he went off the ice slow, and then now he's lingering, and then he gets hit by McAvoy. The wear and tear element from Zadorov's game is starting to show. He's still vulnerable in his own zone. He still coughs the puck up here and there, for sure. I mean, that third Flyers goal from Jason York. Is it Jason York? Jason York?
I was muted. Cam York.
Who's Jason York?
He played for the Bruins a long time ago.
Oh, that's right.
Your brain just pulled it from the same area.
Yeah, that goal was like an elongated shift in the Bruins' D zone because they had possession and it went back into the Boston zone. Zadorov had a giveaway. So, like, there's still that element of his game. But do you guys see what I'm talking about, where the physical element of just having to lean up against him is starting to show up on some opponents here and there?
Yeah, well, first I have to go back to something you said, Brian. Yeah.
By the way,
which was
sorry, I have to go to Jason York stats. To play 49 games, 2006-07, one goal, 7 assists, minus 14.
I love that.
And you remember that, Brian? Somewhere in the back of your mind, it was hanging out there. But you said, "It's the formula, no pun intended." But Nikita and I still don't know what the pun was in.
I think I said a big part of the formula, and I was referring to his size.
Oh, big. Okay. Anyway.
Not my greatest pun, Bridget. You can say it. It's all right. You don't hurt my feelings. It's all good.
But in terms of watching how players like interact with Zadorov, not just like plays that he makes with the puck or you know, just stuff that guys are not willing to do near him. I guess Brian is a good point because people aren't going into those areas, and that's something that you don't notice because you don't really know what it like. Your brain doesn't pick it up in the moment all the time that, okay, maybe guys would have gone into that area if they're going against Matt Grzelcyk, but they're not because it's Nikita Zadorov.
Certainly not as confidently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still think I want to see a little more consistency from him. Like, you know, I think he started to play better, but there's still plays where he, I think, gets caught out of position. There's some of his puck play at times is still not there. Like he'll miss a pass or he'll hold on to it too long. And you know what, again, it's easy saying this looking down from level 9 versus being on the ice with bodies flying all around. Like there's times where I'm like, oh, he had a passing lane, but he held on to it and then it disappeared. And now he's just like chipping it off the boards and it's turning into a battle type of thing. So like some of that, I feel like pace still needs to pick up. But yeah, I do think he's playing better. And most importantly, like he seems to now have a better feel for, you know, when to finish a hit, like when to do that versus early in the season. At times he was like really chasing them. And some of that's probably, you know, you want to make that good first impression on your new team and new city and fan base. And sometimes that works against you. Like, you know, yeah, the Garden's going to go crazy when you land a big hit, but if it ends up at the 2-on-1 behind you and a goal, like everyone's just going to be like, what the hell was Zadorov doing? So,
or a penalty.
Yeah. Right. The penalties were obviously a huge issue and he's cut down on those too. But again, that comes from better positioning and not chasing plays as much. Like, you know, he's still going to get some hitting too hard penalties, which I think you'll live with, but he's definitely cut down on some of the stick infractions, which are the ones that are just like really frustrating. And you could tell like we're driving Jim Montgomery crazy.
All right. So Bridget and Scott, they're 7-2 in their last 9 under Sacco. They got a 4-game win streak going on here. This is, we got to do something here. We got to punish them some way, somehow. This, you know, they've been playing too easy of a schedule. Their opponents are too weak. Should we take a few wins off the board? How can we make right on this win streak of theirs? We can't let this happen. We can't let them beat teams they're supposed to beat and not make a fuss about it. So what can we do to maybe make this better for everybody who's a little upset about this win streak lately? Because they're not playing the best teams, and the Bruins make their own schedule, of course, as we know. Should they be losing these games on purpose, or what do we think here? Pull the goalie in the first period, maybe.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
You know what's going to be good is if they beat Winnipeg on Tuesday, which has been, you know, that's like the game you circle is like, okay, get through the easy ones, and then you get Winnipeg. Well, guess what? Winnipeg has lost 7 of their last 12, so now we can write that one off too. Like, we can preemptively write that off and be like, that wasn't a win against a good team. That was a win against a struggling team. So guys, they have to win the Stanley Cup. Anything short of that is just completely worthless, and we're all just wasting our time.
And ruins our predictions for the season.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about those. My preds aren't looking too good right now. I was far from the only one, though. I'll say that.
By the way, he's being facetious because obviously it's they've been winning games they should win. Yeah, that's a good thing. They need the points. They needed the points. They needed the confidence. Let it carry over. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about if they lose, we'll talk about what went wrong. We'll talk about maybe where they took a step backwards, or maybe something that they still need to work on in order to get themselves into the playoffs. But yeah, they're set up much better than if they hit this Winnipeg game after that Columbus loss that was just demoralizing and got Montgomery fired. Like, if they hit that kind of a game right after the struggles they were having with in the last bits of Montgomery being there, once again, not that it was his fault, but then they weren't as set up for success if that was the timing of it.
And by the way, just so I'm clear, if there were people out there that are pounding their chest during this win streak and this stretch of, you know, point collecting that are sitting there saying cup back on, see, you know, the offseason moves were they were the right moves and the roster's great and they're one of the best teams in the league, and I would be saying to them, pump the brakes. So but there's less of them out there. I don't really see that online much. I see a lot of, you know, these wins, who cares, because they're shit teams that they're playing against. You know, so to both ends of the spectrum, I would say, everybody, just, you know, bring it back to earth a little bit. Just watch the games. Don't celebrate. Don't go crazy and have a party because they're having a good stretch of hockey here, points wise. But, like, you know, just take it for what it's worth. Understand they're playing some lower teams, but that they're collecting points just like they should be. That's all.
I feel like you've been watching too much talk radio this week, Brian. Or listening to too much talk radio.
I've listened to
right into it.
What are they saying? I haven't listened to much, honestly. Any good narratives out there this week?
Pretty much what you said.
Really? So it was rational?
I don't think there's even been much Bruins talk, honestly. It's been all Juan Soto and Patriots, even though Patriots are on a bye. But yeah, another point, like one other thing I would say is like, you can't be a bad team but also have must win or should win games. Like, if you're a bad team, there are no should win games because you can lose to anyone. So, like, again, they are at least separating themselves from the bad non-playoff teams, and like, you have to do that at some point. Again, they weren't for 20 games, so now they are. Like, that is something to be happy about. Like, it's okay to feel a little bit of optimism about that, you know. Like, again, no one's saying like they're suddenly one of the best teams in the NHL and they're going to win the cup. Like, we're saying they're better than where they were, and they're now, you know, at least in a position where they should be a playoff team. And, you know, I would also point out that, like, there are a lot of teams going through tough stretches, whether it's now or early in the season. Like, no one is really pulling away. Like, the Winnipeg Jets, I mentioned, like, got off to that awesome start. What were they, 14-0 to start the year? They're 5-7 since. The Florida Panthers are 5-4-1 in their last 10. The Rangers are falling apart. They just traded away their captain.
Yeah.
The Hurricanes looked like world beaters out of the gate. They're 4-5-1 in their last 10. The Dallas Stars, who we all think is a legitimate cup contender, 5-5 their last 10. Like, just up and down, like, across the board. The Oilers have had a tough stretch. That's a team that went to the cup final last year. Like, it, you know, so it, no one is really separating themselves except, like, oddly, kind of bizarrely, the Washington Capitals, who have Alex Ovechkin out injured right now, and yet they still keep winning games. Tom Wilson's literally eating pucks. Like, that team is separating itself, but, like, I don't know if that's going to continue. I don't know if anyone's really ready to declare, you know, the Capitals the bell of the ball, the top team in the NHL.
Yeah, well, but, and to your point about, like, not, there's not a lot of people separating themselves ahead of the Bruins. Well, the reason why the win against Philly was so important is because they put some separation between them and the Flyers by getting the win. Obviously, it would have been better if it was regulation, but, you know, not losing to them was big because the Flyers are the first team outside the playoffs right now. And I know that's hard to believe because they're not the best team, but you need to beat those teams to not only to get those points for yourself, but to push those guys back down, push them further down below you, and not let them get the points, because that's who you're fighting with at the end of the day. We don't think the Bruins are really going to be fighting with, you know, for the President's Trophy at the end of the season. So you got to make sure those teams that are kind of in the same ballpark as you are, you're pushing them down every chance you get.
Yeah, and I think for the Bruins, you're right, both of you, every team is going to have their stretches, and we don't notice it because we're so focused on Boston, but it happens everywhere, and the Capitals will have their stretch of tough times, I would imagine, unless they're the Bruins of 2 years ago, in which case maybe they have it in a tough time in the playoffs. But I think with the Bruins, guys, I think it was kind of a perfect storm where you go all summer long. No one's talking hockey in the summer. You got the draft in June, and then, you know, you pick things up in training camp. But the Bruins were giving the hockey world some of the first drama and news in the NHL season before the season began with the Jeremy Swayman stuff. So all eyes were on Boston and the shit show that that turned into. And people were starving for NHL content, so they clung to it, everybody. And then you compound that with, oh, also, they're off to one of the worst starts in recent team memory. And, oh, here comes the demise of the Bruins. And don't mistake yourselves, everybody. People love the idea, the prospect of the Boston Bruins shitting the bed and struggling because they're a team that those love to hate. So you combine them being the biggest storyline of the offseason and then the biggest underachiever and disappointment in the first month and a half. There was about 2 months there of anybody in the hockey world, fans, media, team members alike, think of the Boston Bruins, they're thinking, not going too well. But now the Bruins are turning things around. Oh, and then Montgomery gets fired. Now the Bruins are turning things around a little bit, and they're playing better, and other teams are going through their own struggles, and now the attention's off the Bruins, and they're also doing well. So, you know, it's funny, things like, it's a long season and it's still a long way to go and anything can happen. But right now it just feels like, you know, eyes are off the Bruins now a little bit and they can kind of not sit in cruise control, but they can play every game now without feeling the weight of the hockey world staring at every move that they do or don't do.
Yeah. And obviously the drama of getting your coach that was a Jack Adams Award winner 2 years ago canned mid-season. Another major attention grab was the fact that every single week, all of us, and you know, and fans and everybody alike was saying, oh, is it going to be the day? Is today the day? And now that Montgomery, it's officially over, we haven't had that negative conversation that has continued to compile over like, oh, this loss going to do it? Is that loss going to do it? And just the waiting game that was going on with Montgomery and how inevitable it started to feel. So that narrative is gone now too. And with Sacco, he hasn't allowed the narrative to be, oh, you know, is he part of the problem because they've been winning?
Yeah. And by the way, like Sacco continues, it seems to press just about every right button, because we talked about how in the Chicago game, you know, mid game line change to load up that top line, Marchand, Lindholm, Pastrnak, and you end up with two goals from that line, two goals from Geeky Zaka Brazo line. Well, then Saturday, those lines aren't, he starts the game with those same lines. It's not really working. Splits them up and goes back to the old lines, and you start to get something going, and it's Marchand and Brazo, you know, reunited, who connect for the tying goal. So even just like that feel that he has, again, at some point that'll turn, like it does for every coach. You're not gonna always get it right. At some point he's gonna make a change that makes things worse, but for now he seems to have a good feel for when to leave things alone and when to make a change.
Yeah, the last right button he has to push is the power play. We gotta get that converting. But like I said last episode, it is looking more decisive in zone at least.
Yeah, I mean, look, they had 14 shots on the power play on Saturday on six opportunities. So you know, I generally think like if you're up to like two shots per power play, like that's really good. Like that's usually going to be a formula for success. And you know, they did, one of their goals was a power play goal, right? Frederick's first. Yeah. Came at the second unit.
That's
right. So like the second unit has been looking better. But even the first unit, like they did have some great chances. I think it was their first power play of the game. Pastrnak set up two just absolutely outstanding chances. One right to Marchand at the top of the crease that Kolesov makes a great save on. And then one to Zaka, who has a lot of net to shoot at and misses the net. So it's like one of those goes in, and we're talking about two power play goals and one from each unit, and they win in regulation and everything looks great. Instead, you know, again, goalie robs one, Zaka misses the net of the other, and it's like, yeah, now we're still talking about power play has to get going.
Yeah.
So, Bridget and Scott, I have one last question for the two of you. This is semi-hockey related, but not really. So if you'll indulge me, I kind of want to get a little bit of a festive question out here. I asked this yesterday online. I polled some individuals, and the results are still piling in a little bit. But I'll ask you guys, and I'll put it on a platter. So you are home. It's a December night. You're like, I want to get some takeout, put my feet up. Let's pretend you guys aren't at the game. It's an away game for the Bruins, okay?
Okay. Getting Chinese.
You're home. You're home. Well, you know, Bridget, I was going to say maybe some pizza. So Bridget's going over to Briggs for those over in Attleboro. She's going to get some pizza at Briggs. Scott's going to go to Joni's or Supa's or something like that. Maria in Watertown, if you're listening, you're going to go to Greg's here in Watertown. You put your feet up. You got your nice takeout meal, Bruins game. Right beside the TV, you got your Christmas tree. Bridget and Scott, are you going white lights or are you going colored lights?
White lights, always.
So mine has white lights, so I'll say that, but I like the tree at my parents' house has the like lights that you can change colors. So like you can do all white, you can do the
rave, just like
you can do the red green. Yeah, you can have it flash.
Like my old light that I used to have back
there. Yeah, exactly. So I actually like that because sometimes when I'm in a mood for something a little different. But yeah, I think white feels like the safe go-to, but I'm not anti colored lights on the tree at all.
He's like the guy that has all the decorations in his front yard that's on the, like, it's connected to like a radio station, and it's just like and it's like every single note it changes.
I wish I had a big enough house and yard to do that. So I do not.
And budget.
So yeah. I would say I think all looks would look great. I would say outside of a house, I think I like white lights outside of someone's house on their bushes, if they put it on their house. By the way, I don't like the net lights where like they're like all connected. You just put it over a bush. You got to string them yourself. So I would say on the exterior of one's home, I think I might go white. But as far as the tree, you can't go wrong. But I do like, if you're going to go colored, I like the old-fashioned colored lights where like they're bigger bulbs and they're more of the classic red, orange, blue, green, white. Sometimes nowadays you have like the more fluorescent colored lights, and I like the old school ones. But I can also go with white as well. But I thought that was a fun question. Some like just memories, you know, watching Bruins games back in the day at my parents' house. It's always good. It's always better watching hockey when you have the Christmas tree out of your peripheral or any decor for what you celebrate.
Yeah, it was nice at the game yesterday, and they might have – I forget, Bridget, you might remember if they had it Tuesday as well, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but they have the Christmas intro video pregame, yeah. The Christmas pregame video set to Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So it's that time of year. Now we don't get to hear it for a while, though, because they're on the road for 2 weeks. But
yeah, they are. They're back home again before Christmas, right?
Yeah, but... I think two more games, 21st and 23rd.
Yeah, no, they had that Tuesday, Scott. You just weren't paying attention. So,
by the way, guys, there was a
two folks on popcorn.
And waiting for Todd Angeli to come out. You're like, let's just get to Todd.
Did either of you happen to go to Warrior for the Bruins alumni game? They had a lot of the 2011 team playing.
I did not. I was thinking about it, but no, I ended up doing something else Saturday night. So. But it looked like a good time from people who were there. I saw like the Merlot line reunited. Tuukka, of course, was playing forward because he doesn't play goalie anymore in these pickup games. So
retired. When you're retired, you're retired.
a bunch of them were at the game on Saturday too. They were all up in a suite. So
yeah, Bergeron and Krejci still look good. 1-2 down the middle. Although I think they're on the same line with Recchi, but. All right. In any event, we've hit the hour mark. Ridge Scott, any final comments before we go?
I'm all set.
I think we're good, man. I mean, Juan Soto didn't sign, so Scott didn't have to leave. So that's good.
Yeah, Scott's still here.
Not as of 12:45 on Sunday. We'll see by the time this drops.
He'll probably have signed.
Yeah. Well, it's like everyone seems to expect it to happen on Sunday.
Into happening, so.
So guys,
come on, Red Sox, step it up, shock the world.
The next 2 weeks for the Bruins is actually very favorable for our recording schedule because they play on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule by the next 2 weeks, which means this week and next week we'll be able to record after the Tuesday game, drop on Wednesday, and then after the Thursday game, drop on Friday, and then the Saturday game we'll recap on Monday. So how's that sound? So we'll be back Wednesday and Friday this week.
That all sounds great. What does not sound great are 10 p.m. starts.
Get
a couple of those. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. What can you do? All right. Bridget Scott, thank you guys. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday.